Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
7:15, now cloudy start to this Wednesday morning. This seems to be the month that never ends. Remember that old song, "This is a song that never ends," that you kids used to sing? Seems like the month that never ends. It is January 29th, though, a cloudy start. Today you're talking about highs around 66, mostly cloudy, 72 for a high tomorrow, plenty of cloud, 60% chance for showers on Friday, highs of 70. Then sun comes out a little bit on Saturday, highs of 63. Then it warms throughout the Super Bowl week, really, and no chance for showers, at least that they mention now. Highs on Saturday, 63, 68 Sunday, 70 on Monday, 70 on Tuesday, 68 on Wednesday, 70 on Thursday. And there were rumors all over the internet about polar vortex and this and that and the other thing, and that weather's not coming down here. There will be no polar weather, no cold weather for the Super Bowl week. You can forget that rumor, and if anything, it's going to be unseasonably warm, is what Chris Franklin was saying yesterday on Channel 4, at least a little bit above average. Allison Plyer joins us now, chief demographer for the Data Center. How you doing, Allison?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Allison, I got to ask, because everybody's got a story, right? How does one become a chief demographer?
You know, there are not that many demographers in the country.
I didn't think there were. That's why I asked.
Yeah, a lot of them work for the Census Bureau, and many of them work at for states. But we are folks who measure the population, right, who estimate and count the population, and there's various methods for doing that. I did it because... right after Katrina, the Census Bureau's methods fell apart for estimating the population of New Orleans. So I went and got a PhD and learned how to do it, and I got them to change their estimates.
I know it's a very secret, closed society, a lot of costumes, a lot of initiation ceremonies and so forth.
I wish there were.
Skull and bone stuff that you can't really talk about, and I don't want you to disclose that, but I just thought it'd be interesting. Tell me what the numbers show. What about Louisiana in 2024?
Yeah, well, I think the news is that for the first year in several years, the population is estimating an increase in the population of Louisiana for 2024. So that was a little bit of a surprise to everybody.
So where'd they come from?
Well, that's the good question. It's part of it is because the Census Bureau revised their methodology for estimating the population. They got better records on the number of international immigrants. And so the increase, the estimated, which of course estimates are always just estimates, right? But they're estimating for Louisiana right now shows an increase, but but it's entirely due to international immigrants.
So do we have first of all, let's go back, because there was some controversy about the methodology. Refresh our memory on that, if you will, Allison, about what the Census Bureau did.
Yeah, sure. So for the first time, they started using administrative records to estimate the number of net international immigrants. And previously, they had used their American Community Survey results to estimate immigrants. Of course, they have good records on births and deaths, and they incorporate those. And then the question is always, how many international immigrants do we have? And that they had relied on their American Community Survey results, but they were tracking the number of administrative records on things like lawful permanent residence, visa issuances, international student enrollment, refugee admissions, and border releases. And they had always tracked pretty well with those American Community Survey results until about 2020. And then they saw there was starting to be a big difference. There were a lot more people in those administrative records. And so they thought, we need to use the administrative records now. So they made that change. And it showed a big increase in the U.S. population in general, and also a turnaround of Louisiana's population loss just for the 1 year.
So does, and again, I'm trying to understand this, does that mean Louisiana's increases with legal immigration or those that are in the country illegally, or do we know?
We don't know, right? We don't know. They don't have it. So the thing is, there's three important things to keep in mind. 1 year does not make a trend, mm-hmm. right? So people may say, hooray, you know, now the state is gaining population. But, you know, next year's estimate could show it going down again, because estimates are estimates. You don't know until you see several years in a row of an upward trend. Would it be something I would feel confident saying, yay, Louisiana's gaining population. Mm-hmm. Two is, because the way the Census Bureau got these administrative records, they don't really know which state each of these individuals is in. And so they kind of distributed them based on their previous American Community Survey results. They're going to improve that next year. They're going to get better location data on where folks are and say, yes, for sure, these folks are in Louisiana. And then third, it just compiles together a whole bunch of immigrants, but includes, as I said, lawful permanent residents, visa issuances, international student enrollees, all of those, as well as refugee admissions and border releases. All of those are wrapped in here, so we don't know whether they're people we would consider, you know, documented or undocumented.
So if it's 10,000 and the Census Bureau doesn't really know what state they're in, and they kind of allocated it as they thought it should be,
yep.
Do we really know that the population grew by under 10,000, or is that just an estimate?
An estimate.
Okay.
You are reading it right. That's exactly right. We really don't know. And that's why I always tell people, you know, 1 year does not make a trend. You know, we got to see what they do in future years, and then we'll have a better idea. But yeah, we really don't know whether the population grew over the last year.
Correct me if I'm wrong. They had a number, and then they said, well, it should break down like this state by state, and that's how they allocated them?
Yeah, basically. Okay. So, they used the American Community Survey, you know, is something they do every year. It tells us, like, our poverty rates and, you know, the number of homes that don't have access to a vehicle or don't have internet or those sorts of things. And it also asks people, you know, where did you live in the previous year? And from that, they find out folks who came from an international location in the previous year. But, you know, people who are going to respond to the American Community Survey are going to be very different, right, mm-hmm. than people who are border releases, right? They you know, were captured at the border and released. You know, they may be living in, you know, a man camp somewhere, working at a poultry plant, or, you know, hiding in the shadows, right? Those folks aren't not likely to answer the American Community Survey. They may not even receive the American Community Survey. But other folks, you know, who maybe have family, Honduran folks who come to, you know, Jefferson Parish to be with family or whatever, and maybe they're on a student visa, you know, they're more likely to get the American Community Survey. And so I know this is all pretty geeky, but
I don't think it's geeky at all. I just wonder if we really know that the population grew by just under 10,000 people or not.
Yeah, we really do not know.
Okay, let me take a break. Really we'll pick it up. We come back. Thanks for being honest, Allison. 722 and a half. We're talking to Allison Plyer, chief demographer of the data center. Louisiana's population grew by 10,000, or did it? We'll take a break. Come back. Traffic now, WWL. 728 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, about a minute left with Allison Plyer, chief demographer for the data center. Population of Louisiana went up by 10,000. Maybe, maybe not. It's an estimate, and that's what they said, but it would be from immigration. With that being...
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
Being said, Allison... if not for that change with people from outside of the country, what would the numbers have looked like?
Right. And that's that is exactly the right question. And certainly the state would have lost population if it hadn't been for these estimates of people moving in internationally. So so what they're estimating over the last 4 years, all total, is that we had about 60,000 international immigrants migrate, and about 129,000 people leave the state domestically. But I think the thing that people need to realize is that virtually every state in the country is essentially dependent on international immigration for population growth. And that's because, you know, we have such an older population. So many people are more, you know, we've got an aging population, right? We have more deaths, a lot more deaths than we have in previous decades, where our birth rates are pretty low. We've got what's natural increase is what they call, you know, the number of births over deaths. It's about a third of what it was in the U.S. Compared to like two decades ago, right? It's just we just are not growing our own population because we have a large number of deaths as the baby boomers are aging. And so virtually, many, many states are very dependent on international immigration if they're going to stabilize or increase their population.
So to be clear,
I think we don't realize that.
And we're out of time here, but to be clear, you can't crow about, I'm not talking about you, but in general, you can't say, look, what we're doing is increasing the population while talking about deporting people, because at that point, you're kind of, the argument's collapsing on itself. Is that accurate?
Right. And I think the way as a demographer we think about that is that these trends, even if they're accurate, could change dramatically as we engage in larger and larger scale deportations. Yeah.
Thank
or
you,
even
Allison.
Just, you know, it's, yeah. Okay,
gotcha.
Great. Thank
Got you. We're out of time. Okay. We'll take a break. We'll have you on again. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Steve Geller about the Saints coach's search. Minute late. Time now. WWL First News. It is 7:45, quarter till 8. Tommy Tucker, WWL. Adam Schefter tweeting about offensive coordinator Eagles offensive coordinator Ellen. I get it out. Eagles offensive coordinator Kellen Moore emerging as the lead candidate to land the Saints. And before I bring him on, let me explain to you why the sources within organizations leak stuff to people like Adam Schefter. That's because they're looking down the line and they know that they can curry more favor when they need something with somebody nationally. I'm just being honest here, and that's what I do, than they can with somebody local like our sports director, Steve Geller. Steve, I mean that as no disrespect to you at all, but for people that wonder, why does Adam Schefter get this stuff? It's because that's the way it works. Accurate?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Man, this Saints coaching search has turned into a bit of a soap opera with, you know, names dropping out and who's coming to visit, who's not. It doesn't look like we're going to get anything wrapped up until after Super Bowl. And with the Saints being the only open job available, at least there is no rush to name a head coach right now.
I don't think that's necessarily a negative, do you?
No, for sure. I mean, the fact that they don't have to make this snap decision because they've got another team breathing down your neck, maybe interested in that same person. I think losing out on someone like an Aaron Glenn to the New York Jets that one stung a bit just because I think that was probably the team's top option, and he didn't even come back for a second interview here in New Orleans. They got what they wanted in New York. He went there for his in-person interview, and like I say, never left the building. He did leave, but went back to Detroit, talked to his family, and just a couple hours later decided to take the job with the Jets.
To be clear, he was with the Jets before he was with the Saints as a player, right? And secondly, time will tell whether that stings or not. We don't know at this point. We'll have to see how it plays out, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of folks are critical of the thinking that, you know, a defensive-minded coach can get the job done in now today's NFL. And I think you look back, the last four or five Super Bowl matchups, all the coaches are offensive minds, so that's pretty telling.
Let's talk about this Eagles offensive coordinator. Tell me about Kellen Moore.
Yeah, the Saints flew out to Philadelphia Monday night to visit with Kellen Moore. Obviously, Philadelphia is busy getting ready for Super Bowl here in New Orleans, and for him to fly down to New Orleans, have an interview, go back to Philly, and then come back again to get ready for the big game definitely didn't make sense. It shows you, though, how interested I think the Saints are in Kellen Moore to make that trip up to Philly. Supposedly, it was a long interview that started Monday night and went into, you know, the wee hours of Tuesday morning. And I thought there's a few things interesting with Moore. Some will say he's a guy that was born for this. Saw that when he was 17 years old during a recruiting visit, he showed Boise State coaches his own playbook that he had designed. He was a quarterback. His dad was a high school head coach, so he's got that definitely in his blood. And, you know, he's been around the block now in the NFL after being a former quarterback in the league. 6 years as an offensive coordinator. Four of those years he's had top 10 offenses, been with three NFL teams. This will be a first Super Bowl appearance here, and has worked for four head coaches and Jason Garrett, Mike McCarthy, Brandon Staley, and now Nick Sirianni. Look at some of the quarterbacks he helped develop, Dak Prescott, Justin Herbert, and this year with Jalen Hurts. But that's not the talk of the Philadelphia Eagles this season. It's definitely been about their offensive line and the run game that's just been able to demolish and smash people.
Age, I'm of the belief, is just a number. When people talk about, you know, Andy Reid is 66. He's the oldest. He's coaching the Chiefs. Mike McCarthy, who's out of it, was 60. Sean Payton is the sixth oldest coach in the NFL. He's 60. It's funny how time flies. When it comes to the head coach of the Eagles, Nick Sirianni, he's among the younger at the younger end of it. He's only, I got it right here in front of me, 42. Kellen Moore is 36, right?
Yeah, it's wild to think about that, a 36-year-old. And what's pretty and a little fun fact, his senior year at Boise State, he took on a redshirt sophomore quarterback at Fresno State named Derek Carr. So they played each other in college. Pretty funny if the Saints end up hiring him and Carr ends up sticking around.
But I think one way to look at this, first of all, Sean McVay is 38, and he was 30, I think, when he got the head coach with the Rams. So it's not a function of age. You can be successful, I think, in terms of relating to the players. Maybe it could be an advantage to be young. And I think when it comes to offensive creativity, and you can talk about this when we come back from the break, I think it's all about making the most of what you have. And when you talk about a guy showing up with his own playbook at Boise State as, what, a sophomore in high school? Is that what you told me?
Yeah, during his recruiting cycle, 17 years old, the recruiting, the coaches there at Boise State talked about, you know, they were designing plays with him, and he takes out this notebook and basically had a whole list of offensive schemes and ideas that he already had at 17 years old.
So there you go. Maybe that's a very important part of being able to create new schemes and make the most of what you have with the Saints, given the limitations they have. We'll take a break, pick it up, we come back. If you have any questions, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along to WWL Sports Director Steve Geller when we come back. Right now, time for traffic, WWL. 7:57, Tommy Tucker, WWL. A couple of minutes left with Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director, talking about using or rather, Eagles offensive coordinator Kellen Moore becoming a new head coach of the Saints, and an offensive guy, very creative and making the most of the Saints' talent that they have. What about, developing Spencer Rattler, working with Derek Carr, new schemes? What could we look for? Because has moved on? Kubiak, right?
Clint Kubiak is now in Seattle, right?
Yeah. So what could we talk about that, and also in the time we have left, if not Kellen Moore, who?
Yeah, if it's not Kellen Moore, still in the mix, you have Mike Kafka, the offensive coordinator with the New York Giants, who is currently at the Senior Bowl right now with a bunch of other Saints assistants. We heard from him yesterday in the interview process with the Saints, saying everything went well. He's got his fingers crossed and, you know, hoping that things go well with the job opening still there. The defensive coordinator, Miami Dolphins, and Anthony Weaver. And along with, we're talking about Kellen Moore, there's still also interim head coach Darren Rizzi. But I think that ship has kind of sailed. When you look at a Kubiak, you know, taking off, and a few other assistants have taken other jobs, I feel like those guys might have been retained if Rizzi was still the guy around here. That's nothing from, you know, personal knowledge or any kind of inside info there. It just doesn't feel right. Like, kind of like the situation with Mike McCarthy. That interview process kept getting pushed back and back, and something didn't seem right there. And in the end, we found out he's just going to hold his name back and be part of the hiring cycle for next season. As for Kellen Moore, former NFL quarterback, didn't have so much success in the league, but right after retiring, got a job as the QB's coach in Dallas. The very next season was promoted to offensive coordinator and has been in that role ever since, being with the Dallas Cowboys, the LA Chargers last season, and then Philadelphia Eagles this year. Really known as a guy that likes to sling it around, but when you have an offensive line like the Philadelphia Eagles and a running back like Saquon Barkley, he kind of made those adjustments, I feel like, to his game even this year, and was more dedicated to that run because of the talent that he had available. And you look at what Philadelphia's been able to do this year, there's no denying they've been a juggernaut in the run game. And it's going to be curious to see, could it be something like we saw 2 years ago when the Arizona Cardinals lost the Super Bowl? 2 days later, their defensive coordinator was hired by Arizona, stayed right there after the Philadelphia Eagles lost that Super Bowl in Arizona. We could see maybe Kellen Moore stick around in New Orleans after the Eagles play the Chiefs on February 9th.
Thank you, Steve. A pleasure as always. Very informative. Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. We won't hear anything after Monday. And like Steve saying, if it is Kellen Moore, chances are it'd be the Monday after the Super Bowl. We'll be back with Ronald Surpass, WWL.